Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. This is episode 397. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. John, I missed a week. I don't know what's going on now.
Adam, we were worried. We were distressed. We were looking at each other, and we were in our vision. Like, I was looking. Who's on last week? I think it was Sean and Tom. No, it was Sam and Tom. I was looking at Tom last week, and he was turned into like a cartoon ham sandwich. And I was looking at Sam, and she was turned into like a turkey dinner. It was that kind of a situation, Adam. So I'm glad that you're back.
You know, I tried to use that reference on someone, and it completely flew over their heads. And I don't know, like, at what age, like, slightly racist, maybe old Looney Tunes cartoons stop being something that you can immediately speak of and everyone knows what you're talking about. Did that make any sense to you, Ricky Frankel, boy child?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I watched Looney Tunes and shit.
All right. See, so Ricky's on deck with this. Yeah. So maybe Sean wouldn't. So anyways, yeah. So we're here. We're talking about things that happened in the past week or so of punk rock. This is a special episode in that this is going to be our punk rock bowling lead-in episode for the year. So we're going to play a bunch of songs from bands that are playing the Punk Rock Bowling Festival down in Las Vegas, and we are going to speak of that festival at a certain point, which is not right now, but you'll know when we get there, because that's what we'll be talking about. So yeah, John, before we get into anything, is there anything in the mailbag that that we need to address?
Yes,
yeah. If anyone wants to send us mail, I'm going to cut John off. Podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. So what do you got?
We got lots of good mail this week. Let's start. You guys want to start with the long ones or the short ones? What do you guys want to do first?
So what's less frustrating?
Okay, we'll go from less frustrating to most frustrating. Perfect. This is from Jason B., who writes in once in a while, and we always appreciate Jason B. writing in. Jason B. says, "When I buy a shirt at a show, I always put it on over the shirt that I'm already wearing." It's funny. I have no recollection of what we talked about on episodes, even after we recorded them. So we must have been talking about wearing shirts at shows or something.
No, this is my fault. I mentioned that there were people buying shirts at that pill show that I was at and throwing them on over theirs.
Well, in punk rock, the rule is that you shouldn't wear the band shirt to that band show. I disagree with that rule. I think if you're a fan, there's no shame in saying, I'm a fan. I'm here to have a good time. I've been waiting for this. I'm excited to be here, and I'm wearing, you know, my team colors to show that I like this band, and I'm here to support. I'm all for it.
Are you speaking as you or as the letter writer?
Are you asking me if I'm speaking through?
No, are you reading the letter, or were you making a point?
Oh, no, I was making a point.
Oh, all right. Oh,
Jason B. had that one sentence.
Oh, shit. Oh, okay. I thought you were going back into it there, and I wasn't sure who I was talking to. my main problem with the wearing multiple shirts thing, I mean, like, it solves a problem, so don't let me get in the way of your utilitarian problem solving skills, but it just seems like overly hot. Like, I'm mostly looking at that from a comfort thing. But hey, yeah, you do what you do.
As always, the In-N-Out car stash is the way to go. That is the way to go.
If you can achieve the In-N-Out car stash, every time that I can do that, I feel like I've gotten away with something way more illegal than I've actually accomplished.
As a side note, is I actually was at the Decibel Beer and Metal Fest this weekend, or this past weekend, and Integrity played, and they were awesome. But I had some stuff that I need to give to some bands, so I actually got brought in a shopping bag with me with stuff in it, and there was no in and outs, and I bought some t-shirts and some records and stuff. So I'm walking around the concert with this big, like, supermarket shopping bag full of random crap. I felt like a hobo.
Yeah, I've been in that kind of situation where I've been at festivals where I've, like, our hotel was actually pretty far from where the festival was. And, like, early in the day, I end up buying some records and then I just have them. And I know that I'm just, like, dinging them. They're, like, just, like, beating up the covers the whole day as I'm, like, swinging it around with me, right? And it just, but what do you do? I had a contest winner from a contest that I ran at Punk News not too long ago, where part of the contest was you got a bag of random crap that I had. And I don't think it was phrased that way. It was like a Punk News prize pack. But what that means essentially is it was a, it was some screen printed bag that I got from a record store that I filled with, like, you know, 27 promo CDs and then some random 7 inches and, you know, and then like a couple token Punk News ish things so that it would seem like it was a Punk News thing. Like I may have thrown like a mixtape and then like a copy of the Ryan's Hope record in there or something like that. And been like, there you go. It's a Punk News prize pack. So now I like doing this because it clears out garbage from my, my living space, but I wasn't gonna be the dummy to like wander around the show with this bag of shit trying to like find the contest winner. So part of the contest was like, after the show, you text me and I'll give you your bag of shit out of the trunk of my car, which I was informed might seem kind of sketchy. But, you know, I don't know what happened to them. They flaked. They didn't want their shit bag or whatever. So.
Well, listen, if you had the opportunity to get a mixtape and did not pick it up, you blew it, people. Anyways, let's continue. This is from Lodi Trash, and he's talking about our recent Strung Out conversation. Here's what Lodi Trash has to say. Greetings. In episode 393, you guys discussed your general indifference towards Strung Out and their music. I'm writing to bring you my own perspective as a fan of the group on why their music is worthwhile. For starters, they have very dynamic songs. Every song has a unique approach, and there is not a single song that is on the first 5 albums that sounds exactly the same. They achieve this through 2 factors, expert musicianship and open-mindedness. Strung Out is never afraid to take a different route when they feel that they should, and their sound has evolved over the years and very gracefully. I will admit that the past few records are not my personal favorites, but I still listen to them regularly, and they still keep my attention. The songwriting is also another strong point for Strung Out. They are able to write deep and meaningful songs without being overly embellished and pretentious. They cover a wide variety of topics in their music in a manner that listeners can relate to. In response to Adam asking for a writer to suggest 5 songs to listen to by Strung Out, I'll throw my hat in the ring. My suggestions are Mission to Mars, the Exhumation of Virginia Madison, Scarecrow, Solitaire, and the classic Ultimate Devotion. And in response to Gentilly for implying that listening to Strung Out was for wimps, who cares? It was kind of a low blow in my opinion, and that's from Lodi Trash. I don't recall saying that Strung Out music was for wimps. I don't think I would say that.
You'd say that. But that list of song titles would also be an amazing list of like 70s porns.
Well, you know, here...
The Exhumation of Virginia Madison.
Yeah. Like, there's some of them that are really fucking weird, and there's some of them that are clearly porn.
You know, I don't think what his explanation to why they are a good band is, I mean, I didn't find any issue with that. I think he's mainly correct. I mean, from what I've heard, I'm not like the biggest Strung Out connoisseur or anything like that, but from what I've seen and from what I've heard, I've seen them like a lot. They've always played at festivals and shows that I, you know, I'll see other bands at and they'll be there. But their musicianship is fantastic. And I gotta tell you, I don't know if their live performance has gone down or in quality or what, but, I never really could get into them, but I totally respect this guy's, pretty well put together argument for why Strung Out is a good band. I haven't really been able to get into them for however long I've been trying to get into, you know, to have been listening to them. So he's not wrong.
And our last letter is from Liverpool Neil.
Oh, good. Hello,
chaps.
Oh,
Liverpool God. Neil here with my thoughts on the stuff of episode 393. First, Stafford Sean should never be allowed to choose a song ever again. That's when Stafford Sean played This Is How It Ended in Tokyo. Liverpool Neil continues, I have no idea what that horrific thing he played was, but all I know is that I wouldn't classify it as music in any way whatsoever. It had the musical merit of a box of marbles falling down the stairs, tuneless, pointless, and guileless. The only thing I can think of to say was that it was short. With so much great stuff out there, it's time to up your game, young Sean. And John, the electric slide? Really? Really? Now on to the meat. Please don't get a young American or Canadian to talk about NME. Yes, John, I just called you young. It should be done by someone old and British who read it in its heyday. I resemble that description. Flashback to the 70s and 80s in England. Every kid that was into music, and it seemed that every kid was music back then, would wait with bated breath for Thursday because that was when the big three music weeklies came out. The NME, Sounds, and Melody Maker. There was also the Record Mirror, but that was teeny bopper shit. After buying your copy, you would retire to your bedroom and spend all day poring over every page like it was the Bible, reading the band interviews, reading the reviews, seeing what new 7-inch singles you could purchase, etc., etc. The music weeklies really were hugely important and influential for an entire generation of English kids, especially the young punk rockers. It's how you fell in touch with the scene and what was happening. Look in any teenager's house and you will still find a scrapbook with black and white articles and photos from the music papers pasted inside. I know I still have mine. Broadly speaking, NME was the artsy one. It was the one that was always the first to cover new bands and trends and was the first to slag them off, too. There was a degree of cynicism and sarcasm in the writing, and the journalism was of a higher standard than the others. It was the university student's choice. Sounds was a lot more street and straightforward and was the first to cover oi and street punk. And the writing was like that, too. It felt more like fans talking to fans. Melody Maker was always lagging behind, seemingly still caught up in the 60s and early 70s prog scene. Put it this way, if you were looking for an interview with Pierre Ubu, that would be an NME. The Angelic Upstart, that would be Sounds. And Jethro Tull, that would be Melody Maker. The NME had the biggest circulation of the three and always had the reputation for being the first to discover a new band. But as soon as they became popular, they would be the first to tear them down again, sometime viciously. They were also notoriously trendy and warned against making up stories to pull down bands that they didn't consider cool anymore. They famously had a long-running libel case with Morrissey over allegations they had published. They lost and had to issue a public apology. As time passed and the newer generations of kids had less interest in buying or reading about music, the mag started dying. First, Sounds closed its door in 1991. Melody Maker changed into a glossy tabloid to try to keep its readers, but in 2000 it gave up and merged with the NME. But things weren't rosy there either. Throughout the 90s, the real music journalists started leaving and were not replaced. Instead, the NME became a tabloid and started to focus less and less on music and started covering all types of media, music, movie, news, TV shows, video games. With no focus, the magazine lost what had been so special about it, and it lost all identity. The overall standard of journalism became so abysmal that in 2015, they stopped charging for it, but they still found they couldn't even give it away. So when they stopped printing it altogether, wasn't a surprise at all. In reality, it should have ceased publication a decade ago instead of becoming a hollow shell of what it once was. It still has a web presence, but that's a mess of a bad writing, poor coding, and endless pop-ups. It's a migraine-inducing disaster. But let's not forget how influential the NME was in its prime. So influential that the Sex Pistols name checked it in Anarchy in the UK, and it doesn't get much better than that. Anyway, enough yapping from me. As always, thanks to the podcast, guys, and remember to stay free from Liverpool Neil. And I gotta say, Liverpool Neil, thank you for your excellent overview of a guy that was there in the action in the 70s and 80s and what those magazines meant to people in England. I think that was well said, Liverpool Neil.
Another spicy take from Liverpool Neil.
Are we on good with Neil now? Because it was dicey for a while.
I think he's cool with us.
I mean,
it seemed as though like he was mad that he was writing these long heartfelt letters and we were just like laughing at him. And so from his perspective, I can understand why he's annoyed, because he would probably spend a half hour, 45 minutes writing one of these letters, and we'd go ha 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 ha, you know, that Liverpool Neil, but we wouldn't really engage with his letter. However, I think this is one of the high points of Liverpool Neil's letters, along with the time he explained the differences between color and vinyl, because this really was a good overview of what those magazines meant. And I would say, from a reader's perspective, what the three different magazines represented was a very good take and very informative. And I appreciate that cultural overview, if you will.
I will also appreciate that me and Liverpool Neil are now Facebook friends, and he wished me happy birthday. So thank you, Neil. Thank you.
Well, as always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org, and we love getting your letters. And if you want to send Adam birthday wishes, you can do that too.
If you want to send Adam birthday wishes, you're fucking late. So,
how about birthday cash? Are they late for that?
They're never late for birthday cash or general like Wednesday cash. I'll take Wednesday cash. I'll take all sorts of cash. All right. So yeah, that was some mail. That was cool. I want to do a really quick little thing before we get into the gooey center of this episode here, because I have some deals that I gotta get out there to the world. You want to know about the deals, John? I used to work in a supermarket, and when I worked in I worked in produce. You worked in produce, right? Oh, your family. You come from a long line of produce. What am I talking about?
Right? I worked in produce for like 14 years.
Yeah. So when I worked in produce, I was like the weird punk kid with yellow hair, and the guy that ran the produce department hated me, so he would never let me go out on the floor. So I was just always in the freezer, you know, slinging crates of potatoes around, but I was never actually, you didn't put potatoes in the freezer, but you know that, John. But like, you know, I was always, you know, doing, you know, unloading trucks and stuff. I was never actually out there like making.
That's kind of the best job, unloading trucks.
Oh, we had all kinds of shenanigans involved in that, right? But it means that like, I never got to go out and like build like a really nice pyramid of peppers or something, because I wasn't beautiful enough to be able to go do that. But on the one like rare occasion where I was on the floor, I learned that there was this guy that used to come into the grocery store with just like a box of shit. And he'd be like, and he would just like approach everyone, whether they worked there or whether they were like, were you know, customers and stuff, and be like, you want to know about the deals? You want to know about the deals? You want to see the deals? And it was just like this like box of just like electronic trinkets and fake sunglasses and stuff like that that he was trying to peddle. But I'm like, you're in a grocery store, dude. Like this, why are you peddling this in here? And why do you seem so tweaked out about it? It was just like, the deals, man. You want to see the deals? Come on, I got the deals. And it was like, you're not even selling anything cool. It's just like a bunch of dollar store garbage that you have. Like, get the fuck out of here. But
maybe it was like 97 cents.
I guess, but it struck me as weird because like, I mean, it really, Adam, weird because
a guy walking into a grocery store with dollar store sunglasses and trying to sell them struck you as weird.
Yes, it struck me as weird. I'm going to go on a limb. No, but what I don't get is that no one would have been receptive to that. So what was the point of it? Like the person had to have a complete lack of self-awareness to even attempt this. Because there couldn't have been any money that was in it. Like, no one wanted any of this garbage that he had. But he never perceived that what he was doing was at all weird. And that fascinates me. And I wish I knew who that guy was. So anyways, here's the deals, John. We announced on Punk News a couple weeks ago that the Flatliners, which is a band that a lot of you guys know about, they're going to be headlining an event that's going on in Hamilton, Ontario. It's the kickoff of a campaign that is called Goodbye Opioids. I guess that's hashtag Goodbye Opioids, because everything is a hashtag right now. So this is an event that's going on at Club Absinthe, which is one of the punk rock clubs that's in Hamilton. And it's being put on by a Hamilton-based medical cannabis education center, which is called Hello Cannabis. So they're launching this awareness campaign and a fundraising campaign for something that they're calling Goodbye Opioids. And what that is they're trying to introduce the idea of like medical cannabis use as an exit drug for people that are struggling with opioid addiction. And there is a fair amount of, you know, mounding, I guess, like medical evidence that, you know, medical cannabis has a role in trying to wean people off of, you know, opioids and things like that. So anyways, they're doing a big kickoff show. The Flatliners are going to be headlining it. It's going to have comedians and a bunch of cool local bands and all kinds of wackiness. And that show is on April 20th. If you go to Punk News and search for, say, the Flatliners, you'll find a link to this contest or a link to this thing. So we're running a contest where you can actually get free tickets to go into this thing. But also, if you want to just get some tickets and not worry about trying to win a contest that I'm throwing, you can find a link there to go buy tickets. Should you go buy tickets, I have a coupon code. It is our special coupon code. The coupon code is SOMEPUNKS, SOMEPUNKS. And that will get you some indeterminate money off the price of the tickets. I'm not actually sure what the discount is. But if you want to come to Hamilton, Ontario, which is a cool place where B.A. Johnston is from, everyone loves Hamilton, and see the Flatliners play a show that's being put on by a medical cannabis place with me, you can get some discount tickets. So the code is SOMEPUNKS if you want to get tickets to that show. SOMEPUNKS. So there you go.
Now that's what I call a hashtag.
Oh, anyways. Yeah. Don't do opioids. So that's what I wanted to do there. So we're going to move into the portion of the show. Where we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with punk rock bowling. And we're going to do that by playing a song from one of the bands that is playing the event. So Ricky, that's you.
Yeah. So Dead to Me, one of my favorite bands, will be playing with Hot Water Music. And I'm sure we'll get into this later at a club show. I believe at the Bunkhouse. So I thought I'd play their newest single that came out a couple, when did they come out? January? Oh, February, like early February. So here's their new single. It's called Fear is the New Bliss by Dead to Me. Here it is.
Didn't well this to be. We got our eyes closed.
talk a little bit about punk rock bowling. So I guess we should set some ground rules here and let you know what this is if you're living under a rock. So the punk rock bowling is a bowling tournament and music festival, probably primarily a music festival for most of the attending audience, but it's been a long running bowling tournament for bands and punk music industry folk. It goes on in Las Vegas, which is the home location of this thing. It's traveled across the country in past years, but it's back in Vegas this year. It's going on from May 25th through the 28th. It has a big lineup that I guess we'll get into in a minute. There's a festival, there's club shows, there's the bowling tournament, there are pool parties, there's a poker tournament. I promise during this segment that I'm not going to give you all of my like back in the day punk rock bowling stories because I probably exhausted them. But let's talk a little bit about this. How you want to approach this, John? You want to talk lineup or what do you think?
Yeah, let's just talk about the lineups. Some of the more interesting things at punk rock bowling this year. For me, the most interesting thing is Steve Ignorant and Paranoid Visions. And a lot of people don't seem to quite understand what it is. And as we've discussed before, maybe people aren't quite as aware of Crass as they were, say, 10 years ago. Of course, Crass was one of the greatest punk rock bands ever, certainly top 10. And they broke up in 1984. And since then, there hasn't been a Crass reunion, if you will. Steve Ignorant has been in Conflict. He's been in Stratford Mercenaries. He's been in Schwarzenegger. And he's had some other projects, too. Now he's teaming up with Paranoid Visions, who are a early, I believe they're Scottish, not Irish, or maybe they're Irish, long-running anarcho-punk band. They put out a couple albums, and they're really good. This set they're doing is a very special set because it kind of will mirror their Rebellion Fest 2017 set. They played Rebellion Fest 2017 and they did something unusual. What they did is they played tracks from across Steve Ignorant's career, which he's never done before. So they did Crass songs, they did Conflict songs, they did Schwarzenegger, they did Stratford Mercenaries, they did Steve Ignorant Paranoid Visions. So it's kind of, if you ask me, it's the best way for Steve Ignorant to do a live show now. Because if he just did Crass songs again, they would be kind of, he did that in 2007 and 2012, and it was awesome. But if he kept doing it, it would probably run a little dry. So now he's kind of doing like the Steve Ignorant history live, and they just put out a live album. And that album is fantastic. So, I mean, if you ask me, the Steve Ignorant and Paranoid Visions does Crass and other songs is the set to see. I mean, that's going to be really cool. Another band playing that people might not know about so much is the Partisans. Partisans were early late first or early second wave punk rock band from the UK, kind of like a Discharge vein, street punk meets Discharge. And it would be really cool to see those kind of legends. There's really a whole lot of cool stuff like on the midsection. If you like, you know, at the top there's Rise Against, NOFX, At the Drive-In, Boss Tone, Suicidal Tendencies. A lot of people have probably seen those, but for me, the real treats are in the middle section. Steve Ignorant for one, Partisans. The Dwarves are doing a club show, and let me tell you, people. I know I talk about the Dwarves a lot, but I saw the Dwarves do a club show at Punk Rock Bowling in Asbury Park last year. It was so friggin' amazing.
They're good.
Basically, yeah. All of Dwarves are young and good looking. And then they did a whole second set of just the hardcore classics. So it was about, I don't know, 20, 24 Dwarves tracks, maybe more. No breaks, no pausing. Blag, He Who Cannot Be Named, Nick Oliveri, Mark Diamond. And I believe it was, it's your friend on drums, Ricky. What's that guy's name? Hunter Down on drums.
Yeah.
And it was the best possible way for the Dwarves, like just, you know, super intense, super hardcore. But despite that, a lot of craftsmanship in the music. One other thing that I'll mention is Old From Casuals, that, you know, that's Lars Fredriksson. And you know, we go back and forth about Lars Fredriksson at Punk News. I've seen Old From Casuals live and they don't play that many shows. It's a really, really cool show. And to a degree, it's almost, well, I don't want to say it's more Rancid than Rancid, but it's kind of the hardcore. Even though Old Firm Casuals is an oi band, they play really fast and energetically. And so it's kind of the hardcore aspect of Rancid. When they play, it almost reminds me of Rancid 5 to a degree. I mean, it's not a Rancid 5 clone, but that energy and nonstop break is there, which is really cool. Oh, one other band is Rats in the Wall. That's Brad Logan of Leftover Crack. That's his hardcore band with Ava of a band called Gather. And that's a I got to mention one other band. But so Brad Logan was an F minus and Leftover Crack. I would say it's the spiritual successor to F minus. It's not quite as discharging as F minus. Just a little bit more swing to it. Just taste of metal. But if you ask me, it's exactly what good modern hardcore sounds like. Good songwriting, great lyrics, and it's got some real energy and some swing to it. Last thing I got to mention, I talk about them all the time, but I don't even care. Crazy and the Brains. Crazy and the Brains stole the stage at Punk Rock Bowl in 2017 in Asbury Park, and I think they're going to do it in Las Vegas. They were built for the big stage. Like, they're all over. They're crazy. I like them so much, I'm throwing a show with them on Saturday. So, listen, a lot of cool bands. I would say really focus on the middle section bands here. The club shows, a lot of cool stuff.
Are we going to talk about the main lineup and then club shows, or should I just do everything at once?
Whatever you feel like talking about. I mean, what are you most interested in seeing there, Ricky?
So, I mean,
I'll Ricky is actually going. We should make
that. Yeah, I'll be going. So, please, if you're going, don't kill me. That'd be nice. The other thing is,
what a weird thing to request.
Huh?
What a weird thing to request. I mean, that's sort of a given for all of my interactions with other people, but continue.
Sometimes you need to reiterate, people get drunk and crazy, it's Vegas. Anyway, I'll be going. This will be my third year in a row. I'm very excited. I'll start from the top. I'm always excited to see NoFX. That'll be fun. I've never seen Suicidal Tendencies before, so I will be checking them out.
Ricky, I'm going to pause you. NoFX, famously a hit or miss band live. Do you agree with that assessment? And do you think that makes them extra punk in that they really don't care if they're good or not live? At least when they played Punk Rock Bowling Asbury Park, like it seemed to me that they really didn't give a shit that they were up there, and that they didn't really give a shit that they were the headliners.
Yeah.
And from a certain perspective, that's super punk rock and saying, yeah, we're getting paid lots of money. Yeah, we're the headliners, but we don't care. We're just going to screw around because that's what the punk rock thing to do. What's your take on that?
So, I mean, I've seen them probably, believe it or not, probably six times, and at least four of them, they've been fantastic. The others were fine. I've talked about this in the comments with Tom too, and he says every time he's seen them that they're purposely not good like you're talking about. I haven't noticed that. I mean, when I saw them at the Fat Wreck 20 Years tour thing, they were fantastic. And when I saw them with Mean Gene's Direct Hit and Bad Cop at a theater show, they were also really good. So I don't know. I mean, he floated the idea by that they only try when they're like on the West Coast, but I don't see any proof of that. But there have been times at the same time where like they just didn't seem like they were trying that much, which, I mean, I guess to your point, John, that's kind of their thing. And I mean, either way, I enjoy the show, 'cause I gotta tell you, they're one of the funniest bands live. Their shtick and their banter between songs is pretty funny. So that's where I stand with them. But yeah, I've never seen, so I'll go back to the lineup. I've never seen Suicidal Tendencies, believe it or not, even though they're like based out of here. So I want to see them. I really want to see X. I think that is one of the underrated, that's going to be one of the underrated bands. And they'll probably surprise everyone. Always stoked to see one of my favorite bands, Against Me. I'm hoping they do a lot of, I'm hoping they do the whole set of reinventing Axl Rose like they did at Fest. I don't know if that's going to happen though. Okay. Last year, maybe you guys can fill me in on this. I mean, obviously there's like a whole Turbo Negro club thing with the denim jackets or vests.
The Turbo Jugend. They're a youth movement. They're not a club. Come on.
Okay. I don't
listen to this. They're a paramilitary force, Ricky.
Well, anyway, there were a ton of people wearing those jackets last year. So, and I've never seen the band, so that'll be interesting. I'm very interested to see L7. I'm very interested in seeing the Steve Ignorant with and Paranoid Visions, like John mentioned.
Ricky, I don't want to start any rumors here, and I honestly do not have any inside info. Uh-huh. The surprise guest club show openers are Days and Days, Rats in the Wall, right, and Fiends. All three bands with some anarcho-punk pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, my guess, I mean, this, and this was a long shot, and you guys probably remember my rant about this band possibly getting back together, or thinking that my theory that they'd get back together. My guess, I'm hoping, is that, I mean, you'll probably disagree, John. I'm hoping that the surprise guest is Star Fucking Hipsters getting back together. There's no, I've not heard anything. That's
I don't foresee that happening, Ricky. I really don't.
I don't either.
I think Steve Ingram might be a possibility. And this is, we have no inside info. Correct. We really don't. So this is just guessing.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be real cool for Steve Ingram. And, but I mean, who else? The special guest is usually somebody playing the bigger stage later on, right?
Yeah, last year. Yeah, because last year it was the surprise guest ended up being Me First in the Gimme Gimme.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is a good guess. I didn't actually think of that. So, also, you know, I'm always down to see Swingin' Utters too. I know, and DOA. It just occurred to me, I hadn't seen DOA in like 6 years. I've only seen them once, so that'll be cool. And then just club shows. I had to scramble when the club shows went on sale. So, I'll be at the Bunkhouse quite a bit. Again, please don't kill me. So I'll be seeing, the Bronx and the Dwarves, because also.
And the Shrine.
The Shrine too.
Ricky, however, you going to print out a copy of the first review you ever did and give it to him?
It's one of my very few reviews that I totally regret and cringe at looking when I look at it all the time, John. Don't worry about that. But what's really cool is Sciatic Nerve, that kind of super group that made like a huge splash last year. Their album is fantastic. That's like Cobra Skull, Western Addiction, and a bunch of other people are in that band. So I cannot wait to see them. They have not come down here yet, even though they're a Bay Area band. I cannot wait to see them. Let's see.
Fireburn's playing that show. Do you know who Fireburn is?
Yes. It's one of the Bad Brains, isn't it? I've seen them before.
It's the singer that replaced HR in the Bad Brains,
oh,
and
one of the guys that's from
Nails.
Right.
I think it's Todd Jones. So that's an interesting mix.
Yeah, I saw them open for Dag Nasty last year. And then also, this is like the most Ricky set of club shows ever. So I also am going to the Fat Records club show, which is Lagwagon, Dillinger Four, Good Riddance, Western Addiction, Bomb Pops, and The Last Gang. I've only seen Western Addiction once. They are phenomenal live. Phenomenal. I can't wait to see Dillinger 4 again. Also, something really cool that I love about Punk Rock Bowling, and I'll get to the other club shows I'm going to in a minute. I love the record labels that put out, that bring like tents and start selling stuff there. Fat Records always has a fantastic setup where you can get like all the colored vinyl that they normally sell only online there. And they're actually... for this show, they are releasing a vinyl comp that looks amazing. It's going to be all the, I think it's going to feature like all songs from like all the bands that are playing this club show. And it's like this cool highlighter yellow, highlighter blue kind of mixed vinyl. So I'm going to try and get that. I cannot wait for that club show at all. It's going to be amazing. Then I will be going to, Hot Water Music, Strike Anywhere, who I've never seen before. Dead to Me, I've seen them twice this year already, and I can't wait to see them again. Cobra Skulls, which I guess, is that a bit of a reunion? Like, they haven't been around for a while. Right?
Yeah, I feel like Cobra Skulls hasn't played in a bit. I mean, there was a while where they played, like, every 20 minutes in San Francisco, right? But they...
Yeah.
I feel like they've been gone for a bit.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's necessarily, like, a reunion, but still, it's going to be cool to see them. I've never seen them before. Nothington, I haven't seen them since they put out the new record. And then I'll be seeing Laura Jane Grace's acoustic show, which is always amazing. I've seen it once. And it is phenomenal. I think, who else? Darius, is that Darius Kosky too? Yeah, he is also playing that too. I got to tell you, the club shows are amazing. They really went all out for the 20th anniversary. Now that I've talked all about it, I'm like really stoked to be going now. It really hasn't hit me until now.
Plus your homeboy Yotam Ben-Horen is doing a acoustic thing too.
Is he doing that? Is that the same show?
It's him, Steve Soto, Black Dahlia, and John Doe of X, which that's a pretty cool lineup too.
That is a cool lineup. But yeah, those are the ones I'm going to. The other club shows are amazing. I was really tempted to get the tickets for the the Days and Days surprise guest show, but though that sold out, that was the first one to sell out. They also at Place on the 7th, I don't remember being, there's a bunch of shows that club shows are going to be there too. I don't remember that being one of the venues. So I think they have expanded quite a bit.
Yeah, I think there's more club shows than there used to be.
Yeah.
I remember there being like 8 club shows, but here there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 15.
Yeah, I mean, Subhumans are playing it too, who I saw the first year I went, who are great. Dead Boys are playing also, which is kind of neat too. But yeah, I'm very excited for this. Also just to get this out of the way for our podcast listeners, we typically for part of the sponsorship, we typically do a few interviews. John, I believe you interviewed
Steve Ignorant.
So what I'll be doing is I'll be posting these written and as podcast interviews, but I want to give everyone just kind of a heads up and sort of an exclusive. Keep an eye out for an interview with DJ Bonebreak, the drummer of X. That'll be up. He's really cool. It turns out that he lives only a few miles from me, and it turns out his daughter and my brother and sister actually went to the same elementary school for a little while. That we don't talk about that in there, but that was interesting. The next one will be Johnny Bonnell, lead singer of Swing and Utters. So you can look. So keep an eye out for those interviews. They came out really well, I think. And just as a little kind of teaser, DJ Bonebreak has worked with Joe Strummer and the Germs, and I asked him about both of those collaborations. So, definitely look out for those. And hopefully see you at Punk Rock Bowling. Please don't kill me.
Ricky, not only did DJ Bonebreak work with Joe Strummer.
Yes.
I'm confused here. Well, yeah, no, I confused myself. Never mind. Anyway, that'll be a cool interview. Ricky, I'm excited to hear that myself.
Thank you.
I'm going to play a track, and then when we come back, I think Adam's going to talk about Young Gov for some reason. Anyway, this is by the Zero Boys. Zero Boys are doing a club show. I actually just saw Zero Boys the same day as I saw Integrity, and I didn't know a whole lot about Zero Boys. I knew they were an early West Coast punk band. They've recently put out a fair amount of material. Zero Boys are like really cool live. They're considered one of the earliest hardcore punk bands, but I'd say they're hardcore punk in the vein that like early Black Flag is. That is not screaming. It's just really fast, energetic, snappy punk. So this is the Zero Boys doing Civilization's Dying, and you can check them out at Punk Rock Rolling.
So that was a nice little recap of some of the stuff that was going on in Punk Rock Bowling. If you would want to see more about what's going on there, punkrockbowling.com is probably the best place to go to get all those details.
And we're doing lots of cool articles at Punk News. We've run about half of them so far, but I mean, we really have done.
Yeah, you should still go to punknews.org. That right, like you know, open two tabs, and then the one tab. So let's talk about some random stories, some stuff that's gone on in the past week. The first thing I'm going to strategically introduce so that I can accomplish a task here. So the old fashioned that I'm drinking, you heard it clank earlier.
what is an old fashioned, Adam?
An old fashioned, John, is really the first cocktail, like the first thing that was considered a cocktail. You get like a sugar cube and you muddle it down with some bitters and, you know, put a big hunk of ice in there and then put the whiskey of your choice on top of it. And there really isn't a whole lot of ingredients in it. And that's sort of the point. And
it's just whiskey with sugar.
It's kind of whiskey with sugar and a little bit of bitters. Now, I muddled an orange into mine because I'm being sacrilegious right now. But in any case, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to introduce a concept. I'm going to go refill my drink. And by the time I get back, you guys will have discussed this concept. I can do this because I make no claim of putting any effort into this effort at all. Because I'm lazy. So Ian Week is what we want to talk about here. Mm-hmm. John, Ricky, explain to the people Ian Week and where they can find all the goods. I'll be back.
Oh, go ahead, Ricky.
Well, hopefully they listen to the Ian Mackay podcast episode.
Indeed. Not every week at Punk News, twice per year at Punk News, we do band weeks. Our previous band weeks were Dead Kennedys Week, Ramones Week, Black Flag Week. Who am I missing, Ricky? Ramones, Clash Week. Yeah, Clash Week. And I said Dead Kennedys Week, but it was actually Jell-O Week. And our most recent one was Jell-O Week. And so we were going to do a band week this year, for half of the year. But then, you know, Ian really is a great guy to do a band week for instead of a band, because he's got some distinct projects, but they're very distinct and they're easy to say, you need this one, and that one. That is like Jell-O's career is all over the place, but Ian's, the trajectory is very easy to follow. And it's basically easy to hit all the important and also lesser important points and kind of tell the entire story, if you will, maybe in an abridged form, but basically to hit all the important marks. So it was Ian Week this week at Punk News, and we're about halfway through now. We reviewed pretty much, I think, every Ian record there is, Ricky. I don't think we missed anything, really.
Yeah,
I mean, we missed a couple of singles, but those were covered by the album.
Yeah, you know? I mean, we reviewed stuff that I didn't even know existed, to be honest. So I think we always do a pretty thorough job of these when we do these weeks, I think. And yeah, I'm excited.
You know what's interesting is I was thinking about that, but for Ramones Week, we didn't do all the albums at all. We just did like random stuff for Ramones Week. Well, what do you think is the better approach? Like lining everything up and just knocking it down, or just doing some bigger stuff and some weird, obscure stuff?
I think weird, obscure, because, and also if you structure it too much, then what you're going to do is it's going to become work for the rest of the staff. You want it to be more enjoyable than anything. I remember I did, I forgot what album I did for Ramones Week, but I did Rocket to Russia, and I remember doing a single too. I did the Bonzo Goes to Bitbird single too. But I mean, we as long as we got like the major ones, I think they were fine. Also, I think at that time we didn't have as many people on the review staff, so that's something it's to true. Consider. I remember having to do like when we do like 90s week or something like that. I remember having to do like three reviews instead of the usual like two or so.
Those were lean times.
They were. So I think it also just depends on how many people we have, because now we have a good amount of people writing reviews.
That's a good point. Our review staff right now is, and listen, we've had great reviewers in the past. Our current review staff is also excellent. And we've got a lot of people, and they all pitched in. And Ricky, you were witness to this. Not only did they all do a great job and all pitch in, like it was like throwing like raw meat to dogs when we did the dibs list for Ian's stuff.
Oh, it went so fast, yeah.
Wow.
Like that was the problem. Like I knew, it's funny, everyone jumped at the Minor Threat stuff, but I wanted the end hits really badly. So I got that. And then when I needed to do an earlier record of his, I did it the anniversary 7-inch, which I was not that familiar with. So I'd listened to it maybe twice before. But yeah, everyone really wanted this one to go through.
Usually I just say, okay, everybody gets two dibs, pick what you want. But because I knew like this was so hotly anticipated, I actually like had this, like I did pre-dibs for dibs. I was like, listen, it's Wednesday now. You can't dibs anything yet. But at Friday at 2 p.m., then you can dibs and I will post a dibs list. And then when I had to like do this complex like equation to make sure that like no one went in and like dibsed everything. So I did, if you review a minor threat or a Fugazi release, then you also must review a non-minor threat or Fugazi release. Yeah. And I had to have like this super advanced system to make sure it was fair to everybody. And I mean, but I'm glad in that the kids were all like super excited about this. And I think this, the excitement came through. I think the features came out great. I think the articles came out great. And I think the reviews came out great. And it's always a play. It's a lot of work to do these weeks. This week was probably the least amount of work out of all of them, because out of all the band weeks, I know the least amount about Ian and his. I mean, I know about Minor Threat. I don't know so much about Fugazi, so I didn't have to do as much work personally. But everyone pitched in and did a whole. Well, I mean, I did do a lot of work on this week, but not as much as Black Flag week, which was insane. And Jell actually.
I was gonna say Jell Biafra week was insane for you.
True, but to counter that though, that was enjoyable because it was a massive. I mean, it was a lot of work, but it was a huge interview with Jell. So I would never bemoan that. I mean, that was an opportunity, not a burden, but it was a lot of work. But you're right, with this one was less work, but I think the kids really stepped up, and I think everybody did a really great job. I think this Ian week did a great job of, if you don't know a whole lot about Ian, including myself, like I don't know a whole lot about Fugazi, this week is a great way to get a primer. But if you do know a whole lot, then the features in the radio program, there's a lot of stuff in there that you might not know, or stuff that you will find valuable and interesting. Adam, do you have a new perspective of Ian now that Ian Week is halfway over?
No, I don't have a new perspective in particular. I have to get in and read all this stuff. It's sort of amazing to me that, you know, the many hands that create punk news, you know, actually, if you were to go and add it up, like there's a wealth of writing that has been generated by this, you know, flippant John Gentile effort here that we've put online now. So there's a lot to go through. There's going to be a lot to check out and to read. And I feel like, you know, I'm probably a person that knows a lot of this stuff, but there's things that are coming up in our reviews list where I'm like, oh, okay. I did not realize that was an Ian thing at all. So yeah.
Two last things is I'm very excited about the fall. Band week in the fall, and just by the fact that I'm saying it's in the fall, that should give you an idea of who we're going to cover in the fall.
It's not the fall.
That would be a good band week, but honestly, I don't think anybody really knows anything about the fall. I think some people like to say like they like the fall, but I think you'd have a tough time finding a group of writers that could actually write knowledgeably about the fall in an in-depth area. But about in the fall, we will be doing a band week, and I'm very excited for that. Second query, what other band week should we do in the future? Who should we hit? The Damned week would be very fitting, but I don't know if we have enough people with enough knowledge to write beyond the first few albums. You know what I mean?
I don't know which one. I don't want to say anything because last time I guessed the Ian MacKay week, but I mean, I don't even know what we're doing in the fall. So I'm going to.
So you should guess.
I mean, I know, I don't want to screw it up though. I mean, I know we've talked about, like a Descendants all week.
Good guess.
But that's the one.
That would be a good one because the writers are knowledgeable. Yeah. And there's a lot there, and there's a lot of different eras there. That's kind of the key for a band week, is different eras. That's what makes it interesting.
I think it would get the commenters and the readers super stoked too. You can't really go wrong with the Descendants. But again, I don't know what we're doing in the fall, so.
Adam, what are you thinking? Mott the Hoople week or something?
Oh, fuck, man. Mott the Hoople week. That'll be it, right? I'm pretty sure I know what it is. But anyways, you'll just have to tune in and see. So nobody has to go to Punk News between now and like October. So finish reading your Fugazi review or whatever, and then come back in October, and then you can see what we have going on. John, have you heard the new Young Gov record?
He did like another R&B one, didn't he? I haven't heard it. Isn't it like
it's crazy. Young Gov is the solo project of Ben Cook. So Ben Cook is he's the lead singer in No Warning, the pretty seminal Toronto hardcore band, and he's in Fucked Up. And outside of those like heavy music projects, one of the things that I think he does for a day job is that he writes a ton of pop songs. And he's one of these guys that has actually like worked with, you know, I don't know his list of credits off the top of my head, but like where like he's worked with like some pretty famous pop stars and stuff like that. And like, you know,
Taylor Swift,
like ghost written songs for some of these.
Beyonce. He's got a Beyonce credit.
Ben Cook has written some songs for some fucking big acts. Right. So he has this project called, he's always called them, build himself as Young Gov in his solo stuff. And he's done solo stuff that was, I think, what you would expect from being, you know, Mr. Punk Rock. So he had a band called the Marvelous Darlings a few years ago that was him doing really like a kind of like a sugary power pop kind of thing. Like Marvelous Darlings aren't really that far from, say, like a something like the, I don't know, like the Steve Ademic band, or even like Mean Jeans or something, right? Like it's in that vein where you would, you know, of course, you know, hardcore guy is going to have this kind of punk rock side project, sure. But then he released his first solo record as Young Gov a couple, 2-3 years ago, I think it was, which was called Ripe for Love. And like Ripe, R-I-P-E, the letter 4, or the number 4, and then L-U-V, like super sappy, super weird. The whole thing was like, John, how would you describe Ripe for Love? Like, it was like AM radio pop. Like,
yeah, it was like if Prince did 70s AM pop. Exactly. It was a weird, it almost sounded like the Commodores to me. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that is, it's a weird record. He's a weird guy in the good way, if you
will. So the new one that he released like all of a sudden a week ago is called Too Sad to Funk. And right. And two is like the number 2. And in both cases, so the number 2 sad and the number 2 funk. And it makes like Ripe for Love seem like a totally normal solo side project. Like it really leans into his his pop songwriting repertoire, I guess. There's like super heavy like vocoder on some of the tracks. Like a lot of it sounds like mid 80s like new wave, like, but like not the new wave everyone references right now, but like when new wave sort of like melmed into sort of like weird mom van rock, right? Like it's challenging in a way where you go and you listen to it and you're just like, this is so, it is so far into some strange, almost electronic pop world from even the past one that he released, that I sat down and I listened to it for the first time and I was just like, whoa, I'm like, okay, this is not something that I'm going to get into. It just like, it ticks too many, you know, too many boxes that have similarities to the music that I purposefully don't listen to, that I couldn't see myself going and sitting down and listening to this. But John, it's like all I've listened to for 2 weeks.
Those are the best. Those are always, well, not always. Those are often like the greatest, like your favorite records. Of like, you, at first you hate it because you're confused, and then your brain clicks, and you're like, oh my god, this is like super awesome.
Yeah,
and
it's exactly what you're saying. It's all I've listened to for 2 weeks, and I think like it may be because it kind of lines up with something else that I was like almost as a joke exploring, which was
Dragon Ball Z.
No. So John, I spent a lot of time on the internet in the past couple of weeks, investigating vaporwave.
Oh God.
What is vaporwave?
Oh my God. It's like, it's
Ricky knows because he's young. I didn't know it existed.
You know what it is? I mean, I'll let you go into it, Adam, but it's glorified elevator music. That's what it is.
Oh God. So here's the thing. This is gonna be another patented like Adam drug story, right? So Yeah, I'm sorry.
You fucking
the podcast stoner. Is becoming like the podcast is becoming like Cheech and Chong, except it's Adam and Adam.
No, but this is true, right? This is a true story. So I'm super high for whatever. So and then for whatever reason, I end up on the internet with something saying vaporwave, and I'm like, I don't know what vaporwave is. I've never heard this term before.
I am so cringing so hard right now.
So I start looking into what this is, and it's this, so it's like a meme-y microgenre of music and art that showed up on the internet and got like really popular and really weird on like the Reddit and 4chan world of the internet, yeah, the 4 or 5 years ago. And is pretty much like it's dead now. It's like these microgenres that kind of like crop up and go away now from a, but what was blowing my mind, cause I was high, was there's all these essays now that are written about it, like as postmortem essays. And some of these essays are taking the stance of, did this genre of music actually exist, or was everyone just referencing it, but it didn't really exist?
No, it existed.
No, I know it exists because you can go and you can pull up the fucking videos of it. But like what it is from a genre standpoint is people are taking all of this. Like elevator music is a good way to think about it. Like mood music, like the music, yeah, that you would have heard on the PA in a Kmart in like 1989, and they're taking that and they're doing like electronic remixes of it, where they're basically like essentially they're just dropping the tempo of it and stretching these, like, you know, these fairly toothless middle of the road funk pop songs from the 80s into, yeah, these kind of atmospheric sounding electronic music just by the sake of just stretching it, essentially, right? Yeah. And there's this whole visual aesthetic that went around with it that's very 80s, and then there's this whole aspect to it where they introduce a lot of like early 90s computer noises and things like that. Like you'll listen to some vaporwave song in the middle of it, there'll be like the Windows 95,
yeah,
or something, right? Like so there's all this stuff. So in any case, I'm sitting there, I'm kind of out of my gourd, I'm blown away by some of the fact that some genre of music like arose, became super popular in some segment of the internet, and then died, and I had never heard of it at all. But a lot of the, right after I had been investigating this, was I think when I sat down and I heard this new Young Gov record. And while it's not a vaporwave record, it touches on a lot of the same thematic things. Like it's playing with a lot of music that you could totally consider related to those genres that the vaporwave art artists, quote unquote, I guess, were remixing. And there's little kind of, they're not skits, but there's little like audio clips and stuff like that in between some of the tracks on the Young Gov record that will be like random clips of like old radio station ads, or, you know, there's a clip of like a KFC commercial that appears between two things on it. Like it's, that was my phone telling me to go to bed, by the way. So it does all this kind of like post-consumerism stuff that also factors into whatever vaporwave was trying to be, or at least whatever like people have retroactively decided that vaporwave meant. So I became fascinated in this dumb meme-y microgenre of music at the same point where I got into this record, and the two sort of dovetailed in my brain and made a connection. And now I'm like, ooh, this is interesting to me. John, none of the music from this genre of music is worth listening to at all, and that's no. The weird, that,
oh, I thought you're saying you learned to enjoy it. You don't.
No,
like
no,
it.
No. Like, no, well, I mean, I enjoy the Young Gov record because it's actually well written. Anything that I've sat down and listened to that has been officially declared vaporwave by the people that decide these things on YouTube, I guess.
Well, here's the thing. Like, here's
none
the thing.
Of it. None of it's good. Like, none of it's something that I would ever sit down and go and seek out or listen to or anything like that. But my whole time of actually discovering this and sitting there, on my phone, going at this and kind of being blown away by it again because I was high. I didn't actually sit down and listen to any of the music. I was just sort of blown away by the concept of it. Like and I think that's what truly makes a good, you know, like meme based musical microgenre, is that you don't actually have to listen to the music to kind of appreciate that wow, this was a weird thing that happened. Like, we're in total like Guy Debord Society of the Spectacle level weird shit now, where, you know, I'm a fan of a genre of music that I don't actually want to listen to. So,
well, the other thing is, like, I wasn't aware that it died. I follow some music people on YouTube as well, that aren't into punk rock, but
like it moved so fast that I assume that, like, me as like middle-aged dad learning about it in 2018, there's probably, like, you know, I assume that there's like tweaked out 21-year-olds that, you know, are, you know, that was a thing that they were into 5 years ago, but now they've moved on to all these other genres of music that I've never heard of.
I don't even think it's been around for 5 years.
Maybe.
I mean, I found out about it like a year ago. Partially also because, like, apparently this might not be right, but apparently, like, it has a big, like cassette tape culture part of it, I think. I think that sort of drove cassettes a little bit, but, I don't know. I listened to it. It is just, I mean, I feel my IQ going further, like, just dropping every time I do.
I'm starting to become really fascinated in the fact that, like, there are subcultural genres that only exist because they showed up on Tumblr and then people decided it was a thing. Like, the other one that popped up was like, yeah, you know this. I don't know how you know this. This is an age thing.
Me?
I guess. Like, yeah. I
found out about it.
Because I said Vaporwave and you went, like,
yeah.
So it wasn't obscure enough that you, so are you aware of C-Punk?
I've heard of it. I've not listened to it.
Like the water, C-Punk?
Oh, isn't that, you know, they've got that hit, Who Lives in a Pineapple Under the Sea? That's a good song.
It is some other
weird genre of like art, music, and fashion that like all of a sudden cropped up in like 2011. Like,
message boards are weird, man.
Adam, you have given me a good idea for next year's April Fools. Maybe we should be thinking long range. Like, maybe every, I don't know, 15 or 20 reviews, we'll put a reference to a genre. Like, oh, this is firmly, you know, this is clearly influenced by some genre and it doesn't exist. And we'll keep referencing it here and there. And maybe we'll run an article.
Then all of a sudden, just like by diffusion, it exists, right? Like, if we're like, like, oh yeah, this is totally one of those like Borkcore bands, and everyone's like, what's Borkcore? And it doesn't matter what Borkcore is. Eventually someone will figure out what Borkcore is. And like, I don't know. I feel that like we could be playing a really long game of just fucking with everyone
I could put out a Borkcore cassette tape. And like, it's already sold out, so no one can get it.
It doesn't
need
to exist. It just needs to be on Discogs, right? Like, that's all that matters.
Surprise! Next fall, it's Vaporwave Week. Adam just let the cat out of the bag.
I did. Yeah, we're gonna do that. What was that? That Macintosh record. Anyways, okay. So I don't know how that got into Vapor. Oh yeah, because the Young Gov record. Go listen to the Young Gov record. It's cool. It's weird enough that I was going to play a song from it on this episode and I decided not to because I didn't want to like make people mad. Like, it's not offensive or anything, but like it is like, I'm worried that like, I don't want to get like Liverpool Neil's letter about like, you know, you played utter trash on this episode. I'm trying to respect that this is the punk news podcast, but like, man, it is, It is a cool, challenging thing. So you should go check out Young Gov's Too Sad to Funk.
I want to quickly dovetail off that. We're talking about substances and references to music. I was at Decibel Metal and Beer Fest in Philadelphia this past week. It's pretty extreme heavy metal bands like Carcass, And some not like Monster Magnet, which is not that extreme, but some pretty extreme bands like Carcass and those kind of guys. And Integrity, which was friggin' awesome. And craft beer. Philadelphia in the 90s was notorious for like fights because people, they would start shows late. People would be drinking like tons of Bud Light, Coors Light, and there would just be a violent brawl at metal shows. Like it was a rough scene in the 90s. Adam and Ricky. Decibel, extreme metal and craft beer, where for $40 you could drink as much as you want. How violent do you think it was?
Well, first of all, I think the one thing that we need to take into consideration is that Philly fans, regardless of what they're fans of, are fucking insane.
Indeed.
So, like, you know, whether it's the Phillies or the Eagles or just whatever, just maybe just a random riot, it's usually Philadelphia. I wouldn't be surprised if a few fights broke out. I mean, $40 is that may, you know, people probably don't want to get kicked out. So, yeah, I mean, drink all you want. God,
I say no. I say none. I say it was peaceful.
I think
I couldn't believe how peaceful it was. Like, I thought for sure it was just going to be wall to wall, like fist fighting, and I'd be like hanging out in the balcony, just like, you know.
No,
like,
but I know why. I can explain to you why.
Well, I will guess and you will answer. I guess because at Slayer in the 90s, it was Coors Light and people would just slam it down and brawl. Whereas this, because it was craft beer fest, people were more focused on sipping and enjoying their beer rather than getting drunk. Adam?
I've been to craft beer fest where everyone, including me, gets super drunk. No. I mean, I would say it probably has something to do with your general age and demeanor of the audience, where I would imagine like the kind of guys that are going to like metal show, like big crazy metal shows like that in the 2018s, whatever you call this era that we're in, are probably like 30 something beardo dad guys who are the same guys that are super into craft beer. And, you know, they're not there to, They're not there to work out their teenage angst. They're there to get drunk and to you know, rock out to some metal. Like it's a different. There's a different motivation that is underlying those people, that the lack of inhibition from the alcohol is going to bring forth a different thing. So the lack of inhibition from the alcohol, this brings probably, I would imagine, would bring out more, you know, bro-y whiskey and friendship feelings. Your favorite shit, John.
Yeah.
Than perhaps in the rough and tumble early days of Coors Light and teenagers.
And Slayer!
Right? I have to say, as a person in which I'm pretty sure it is illegal in Canada, or at least Ontario, to do things that way, I'm blown away that it's even possible to orchestrate a beer event that works that way. So if you go to a beer fest, at least in Ontario, it's, you know, you get in the door and you buy you got to go buy a bag of tokens, and like, you go to your beer booths, and like each brewery's booth would be like, oh yeah, well, like a pour is, you know, two tokens from this booth or something like that. And you like use up your tokens. And then if you want more, you got to go buy more tokens. There's always someone that can cut you off, just like going back to the bar or anything like that. Then we just in the past couple of years started going to these beer festivals that they do in Buffalo. And it's you know, it's what you described, where like you pay like $40 and then they give you like 2-3 hours in this place where you just, you know, go drink what you drink, right? And not having that, we assume that that's, so it's just either like it's either an orgy or some sort of massacre that happens. But like, no, it's not. It actually just sort of works out. And it makes us mad about our nanny state that doesn't let us have unlimited beer for $40. Let me tell you. Yeah. But yeah.
I was having flashbacks of Slayer 97. I had my football helmet on. I had my pads. I'm like, all right, I'm going to survive this one.
Everyone's like, that guy looks really tense. We don't know what that guy's problem is. He's really on edge.
And people were just sipping and talking about hops and malt and enjoying their expensive brews.
Oh, it sounds like a wonderful time. So we're going to talk about, I guess, a couple stories, things that happened this week that we should bring up. The big one from my standpoint, at least from the people that I associate with on the internet standpoint, is that Culture Abuse has released a new song. So this is a band that released an album called Peach a couple years ago, had a track on it that was called Dream On that was just fucking killer and has been stuck in my head forever. And Peach was on, I'm trying to think what label it was on. It was on,
I think it was Epitaph.
No. Peach was on like, No, it was on something called like 6131 Records. Like,
oh, that's right.
Who I don't know who that is, and I don't recall hearing too much about
them. I thought it was Capricorn Records.
No, it was definitely this like 6131.
I thought it was produced by Tom Dowd.
But in any case, it was a record that just seemed to, without having any particular connection to, you know, some existing label or some existing band that everyone knew about, everyone who heard that single just sort of got into it and picked up that record, and it showed up on a ton of year-end lists that year. And it was a nice moment where you could look around and go like, wow, this band sort of just like emerged from nowhere. And I don't know, it gave you a little bit of hope, right? Because it wasn't like, oh, this is the new band from like the former members of X, right? I meant X as in a variable, not as in the band X, but right. It was just like a new band that people were stoked about. And like, that was great to see. So Culture Abuse got signed to Epitaph. They have their first record on Epitaph that's coming out this year. They've announced it and everything. It's called Bay Dream. It's out on June 15th, and they released a song from here. The song is called Calm E, C-A-L-M space E. And you can go stream it on YouTube or whatever you want right now. And, you know, cover art, track listing, all that kind of stuff is up. So I'm curious what you guys thought of this. I'm curious what people that are into this band's past record think of this too. Because there's a degree to which it is like it's a little bit cleaner, it's a little bit more pop than the stuff that was on their last record. But I've not seen anyone voice a negative opinion about that, at least from, you know, everyone seems very excited from what I've seen, but I feel like if I was on the internet talking about a different band at a different time, that would be what everyone bitches about. But yeah, so it's here. Like, did anyone, you guys check this out? Any thoughts about it? I have like a super weird thought about it, but I'm going to hold it for a sec.
You know, I tried Peach. It really didn't, the album, it didn't really do much for me. I was happy to write this article up, but this band has never been really something I could really get into. It was a little too, at least this single was kind of a little too mellow for me. So, I didn't find it offensive though. I thought it was fine. Just, not really my thing.
So my weird thought about this, and I can't get it out of my head now that I've noticed it, is there's a part in the chorus in here that has the same, it has like the exact same lyrical rhythm of the end of the song You Get What You Give by the New Radicals from the 90s. there's a part in that song that it's just at the end. It's like an outro to that song where there's something about like, God, like Courtney Love and Marilyn Manson or something is the lyric, right? And just the rhythm at which he sings that is almost like dead on fucking identical to a certain part of this Culture Abuse song. And not that that was ever, I'm not saying there was some intentional linkage between the two or anything like that. It's just that, like, you know, you shuffle the deck enough and you'll get something that's kind of similar, but shit. Like, now that I've heard that, I can't hear this song without hearing it. And it's weird, 'cause it was like a dumb pop song from the 90s, but I don't know. I'm curious to see the rest of this. This was just, I don't know. I think this was more poppy than I was expecting. But hey, we'll see. Mr. John.
Mr. Adam. Poppy.
Character actor.
Character actor. Character actor is the new band featuring Brian Gorsegner on drums of Nightbirds, featuring Even Keel of Four to Death on bass, I believe, and featuring Jeff Schrock of the Ergs, longtime singer of the Ergs, on guitar. They've got a new song out. This song is called On Rubicon Beach. They've got a new 7-inch. It's going to have, I think, 3 songs on it, and that's coming out via Dirt Cult, which I think is a fitting label. The reason they're doing this is they've actually been planning on doing it a long while. Right now, Nightbirds are laying low, so I think this is kind of just a fun project for them. They're planning on gigging. The track itself, I would say, is exactly the midpoint between all three bands, Ergs, Four to Death, and Nightbirds. It's got the Nightbirds, you know, riffage to a degree, the Nightbirds energy, but it's definitely, at the core, is definitely the Ergs melody and love of pop punk. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's a cool track. I think it sounds like Ergs on steroids is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the first time I listened to the song twice, once when I wrote the article and then before the podcast, the first time I was like, this is cool. But it doesn't make me want to like jump out and, you know, jump and get the 7-inch when it's goes up for pre-order. But, I'm curious to know if they kind of expand the sound a little bit in the other two songs. So this might be one of those records that I'll kind of just pre-order and give it a chance and see how what it's like. But overall, I honestly, if Brian Gorsinger is in it, and I'm willing to give it a shot. Nightbirds rule. I would like the Ergs and Forward to Death. So I'm willing to kind of venture out and give these guys a shot.
As a side note, if you ever go on Discogs and check out Brian Gorsinger's credits,
I haven't.
He's been in a million bands. And he's probably been on over, I would say, 100, not 100 albums, but 100 different releases. Like, the number of bands he's been, he was in an Oi band. He's been in, like, and he's done drums, guitar, bass, vocals. He's been all over. Talk about a guy that's been multi-talented, I guess.
Isn't he doing drums for this one, though?
He's drumming on this one, yes.
Okay, cool.
Dirt Cult rules. That label is so much great stuff that they've released over the years, and I feel that like they, I mean, I don't know, like they seem to fly under our radar a little bit as far as the kind of bands that we cover. We should pay more attention to them. They've done so much cool stuff.
Indeed, I would counter that Dirt Cult is, and I'm not dissing Dirt Cult. Dirt Cult is a cool label. It feels to me, I could be wrong, they're one of these bands that doesn't seek out publicity, doesn't seek out press. They're like, we're just going to do what we're going to do, and if you find us, you find us. If you don't, we don't. I mean, it's kind of right there in their name. You know what I mean? Like I don't ever have Dirt Cult people reaching out to me or PR people reaching out.
Yeah, no, I don't know who does PR for them, if anyone, because it doesn't cross my plate either. But just I'm just like running through their band list and just like, I own a good handful of Dirt Cult records without having attempted to, right? Like I wasn't trying to follow this label, but you know, 5, 6, 7 bands that are on here are bands I'm, you know, pretty heavily invested in already. So, you know, they're
ditto for, I feel it's a grave mistake in a similar label in that respect.
And yeah. Dirt Nap.
Yeah. I mean, like the cool thing I was going to mentioned this when we were talking about the Punk Rock Bowling lineup was like there's some like long tail Dirt Nap alumnus that are showing up on there between the Briefs playing and the Marked Men and then Radioactivity. Like there's more than a few things that Dirt Nap had a hand in, you know, getting known that are now on the big stage there amongst all like the Fat Wreck bands and stuff. So
That's Mean cool. Mean Jeans is the
seems Mean to Jeans like too. Their, yeah,
yeah. I mean, they made it to Fat, and they also put out a really awesome record too
about pizza. So, what else do we got on the story docket here that we want to talk about here? We want to talk about any of these other ones?
Yes, I think. I'll read this one. Okay. We should mention this because these guys have been around forever and
okay, we should. Yeah, all right.
Okay,
yeah,
so we should. Pennywise have released a new track called Won't Give Up the Fight. The song will be on the band's upcoming album titled Never Gonna Die. which is due out on April 20th, 2018 via Epitaph Records. And you can find the song on the punk in the Punk News article. I'll just give my thoughts real quick. I mean, this is Pennywise being Pennywise. People seem to be happy with it. I think this is some of the better stuff they've released recently. Though I do have a special place in my heart for, what was that record called? That song Western World, I actually really liked and remember hearing on the radio. But and I, there are, you know, speaking of Punk Rock Bowling, they played it last year. They were quite good. They did a Circle Jerks cover with Greg Hetson. They brought him up on stage, and that was pretty cool. So yeah, new Pennywise coming out. What do you think, Adam?
I don't dislike this.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't mean that. That I've never been a person that has listened to Pennywise, and I've never begrudged people that listen to Pennywise, despite sort of like the bro stigma that the internet gave them for a while. But
yeah.
But I feel that there's bros and there's bros, right, Ricky? Like the guys.
What kind of bro is Ricky?
Ooh, Ricky's a different flavor of bro. But the no, but like when we, I feel that like when we were all making fun of, you know, guys in hoodies and shorts that were at Pennywise shows pumping their fist along to bro him or something like that. Right. That's a different flavor of bro than
yeah.
The kind that has been popularized and bedeviled on the internet in recent years. So I don't want those two things to get like, you know, all mashed in together. Like when I look at Pennywise now, I feel that like a lot of my cynicism has sort of melted, and I go, all right, you know what? That's, you know, long running punk rock band. That's a contemporary to Bad Religion that, well, I wasn't listening to them back in the time, and they may have had some samey records or whatever. You know, I'm not going to shit on them for doing what they do. So that's, you know, I'm cool with it. I mean,
I have a question, but
yeah. I mean, a big part of it is that like, I'm pretty sure was Jim Lindberg in,
he has a couple bands. I mean,
No. In that film, was he in that other F word?
Oh, Punk Rock Dads. Yeah.
It was called the other F word.
Yeah. So when I was at, when I was expecting my first kid, and I hadn't told anyone, like outside of my immediate family that we were expecting.
But I knew. I remember.
Like I hadn't told anyone that we were expecting. And I went to Pooza that year, and I was hanging out with Kira, and me and Kira at one point like peeled off from like the actual Pooza Fest stuff. And we went to this like anarchist book fair at a university, and I told her, and she was super happy because Kira is a wonderful person, of course. But then we got back to like where the main Pooza stuff was going on in Montreal. And one of the things that they were doing that year was they were doing like a little film thing where they rented out like a local a local alt theater, and they were just like showing various punk rock films. And one of them that they were showing was Other F Word. So me and like four other people went and sat in this theater and watched the Other F Word. And I'm all like, my head is swimming on the fact that I'm expecting a kid. And Jim Lindberg was a big part of that. And I'm just like, I can't hate this person right now. So yeah, that broke my frosty Pennywise exterior. But in any case, I don't know. Like, I don't hate this. I mean, it's not interesting,
right?
But no Pennywise stuff is particularly interesting. But
they're doing what they do. I mean, and they're doing it well here.
Nostalgic for me to hear this kind of music right now, and I'm down.
I had a question for either of you. Have either of you ever gone on stage at a Pennywise performance when they bring everyone up during Bro Him?
No.
No, I saw Pennywise once, and it was the reason I went is because Circle Jerks were opening, and only me and one other guy were into the Circle Jerks, and we were trying to get the crowd like juiced up. So he and I were moshing into each other while everyone else was like looking at us. And I always remember Keith Morris like being pissed off because no one cared, and then he said something like "Thanks to those that care," like nodding at me and the other dude, and I was like, "Oh man, that was awesome." And then Pennywise, and no one knew the Circle Jerks, and then Pennywise came out, and people went crazy.
I have that's actually awesome. You got to see the Circle Jerks. I have, I think the first time I saw Pennywise live, I did go on stage with them, and I was standing next to Fletcher the whole time, and that was cool. That was at the Phoenix Theater in Petaluma, California, and Teenage Bottle Rocket opened for them, which was kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. So I don't know. I mean, I don't hate this. I'm all right. I can deal.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's what you want. You want fine.
Exactly. Yeah.
John doesn't want fine. John wants everything to be on fire.
I do want everything to be on fire. But listen, I mean, honestly, like to tell you the truth, Eric Peterson of Mischief Brew passed away, we did a podcast for Mischief Brew. And I can't hate on Pennywise because Jim Lindbergh, who didn't even know a whole lot about Mischief Brew, but was like had literally heard a couple other tracks. He wrote in a very nice letter, and you could just tell that he's a nice, caring person. And the fact that he took time out to do that for a band that he doesn't even really know that is significantly less popular than his band. I can't hate on the guy. You know, it's not my favorite music in the world, but listen, if people dig Pennywise, you know, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And different strokes with different folks. And if anything, it's more punk than a lot of stuff I hear. So listen,
are we going to be sitting here in like 10 years and be like, you know, falling in reverse, you know, I used to hate them and everything, but you know, they're still keeping at it. Right.
They got fans, you know, they got some fans.
It's like more punk than all this fucking vaporwave glitchcore everyone's listening to. At least there's a guitar. Oh, Jesus. All right. Are we done? We might be done.
I think we got to shut it down.
All right. Yeah. All right. I'm going to play a song that we'll get out of here. So this is another band that is playing punk rock bowling. So I mentioned Dirt Nap a second ago. So we're going to play a song from Radioactivity, which is the big post Marked Men band, although there's been lots of post Marked Men bands. We're going to play something from Radioactivity. So what are we going to play? Let's play Silent Kill, which is the title track off the band's second record, their most recent, which would have been like 2015 or something like that. So anyways, this is Silent Kill by Radioactivity. They are playing one of the club shows. Which one are they playing? They're playing the show with Hagfish on Friday, May 25th. So here you go. Radioactivity from Denton, Texas. We're back. We're done. If anyone wants to send us email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. And And that's it. If you see Ricky at Punk Rock Bowling, please
don't kill him.
Don't kill him.
Thank you.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.